Welcome to the, what is this? What month are we?
Ninth? September.
September 9th podcast of the IsCast. We are Intersection Studio. Here with Wade,
Multiple.
Ben, David, and myself, Lee.
I'm back.
Woo. Hello. Yeah, this is a, it's been like 2 months since we've all been on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did the RTX correct. And then David was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so
how's
glad
everybody
you
doing?
Asked me to come back.
Good. David has a new job and
I do.
Awesome opportunity that is good news for us. You want
to? Yeah. So I was lucky enough to recently be hired at Cinequipped, which is a Minnesota-based production rental company. So they rent out a lot of cameras and microphones and lights and grip stuff and all that kind of equipment for companies. And so it's going to provide for a lot of cool opportunities for us to try out gear that we would not normally have. Like right now I have out a Steadicam vest, so usually
excited for that.
Yeah, usually
what's the retail price on that thing?
That's probably about $6,000. Yeah, they're not cheap. And yeah. We were in the I am in the process of making one. Obviously it's not going to be good as the real thing, but you know, I didn't have $6,000 or whatever.
Plus it's also in Steadicam, which is the brand name.
Yep the main
it's not brand. A knockoff.
Yep.
Oh, that's actually a brand name?
Yeah.
Steadicam's the brand name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says so on the case even. Like,
are they the first ones or just the popular ones?
They're the first ones because they made the Steadicam vest, and then Panavision tried to make their own version. They basically copied it, if I'm remembering the story correctly. And then they got into a huge, big lawsuit about it, and Panavision had to stop making them and had to destroy all of them.
Wow.
Throw them into incinerators.
So it's not like the Kleenex, like, you know, like in tissues, how...
Well, no, I think there are some other versions of it, but it has become...
When did those
like
come out? Because that was probably the first time, like, shooting styles started becoming more mobile, as in professionally. Like, before, it's all, you know, just tripods and...
when are you saying that happened?
I'm asking when those came out.
It like, would... I honestly couldn't put a date on it.
Created.
Well, you know, 90s for sure. You had movies that were doing.
Oh,
that.
It was way earlier than that. Even like we at Cinequipped, we have a really, really old Steadicam arm. It's probably about 30 years old.
Well, they probably had a match with the cameras being smaller too, because
it was dependent. It was dependent. It was probably around the time when 35 millimeter cameras start to become smaller.
Yeah.
And like the other Steadicam arm we have, we actually don't even send out anymore because it is calibrated and set for film cameras that are so much heavier than modern digital cameras. You can't use it.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What other? I'm really excited about lenses that we can try.
Yeah.
You said there was a Canon EF mount one that.
Yep, we just got Canon has just started to release EF mount compact primes, which compact primes are amazing lenses that are really geared towards cinema making, and we've just started to get in a bunch of those that complement. We had Zeiss compact prime lenses as well,
right?
And then we have those are all fantastic. We have Cook lenses, which Cooks are like all handmade. Lenses, like they hand grind the lenses in one factory in England.
Wow.
And like one of the other workers there went to visit because he got certified to do certain repairs on the lenses.
Go ahead.
No. And he went there and like he saw that someone was actually doing the grinding of the lens, and he's like, "Well, how do you know when it's done?" And he goes, "Well, it's done when it's done." the factory is set up at like as an apprenticeship kind of thing. Like somebody goes in and you train. And like, there's one woman in the entire factory who makes all the irises for the aperture.
Yeah.
And that's all she does all day. And like, these are really, really nice lenses.
What's the appeal of having a lens handcrafted? Because is that better?
It might be. I think Cook. I don't know a whole lot about. I hadn't even heard of Cook lenses until I started working there and started learning about the gear. But I'm sure it's for them. It's just they get such a high quality out of them.
Because I get the appeal of having like a handcrafted like
beer.
This bottle of Patron when it was handcrafted glass, because it's supposed to be aesthetically pleasing, but a lens has to be like precise.
Functional.
Yeah.
And I can
things you can get more functional with human touch.
Yeah.
Like machines.
Huh. Like if you like these
can
aren't
only get it so far.
Like, you know, for let me put it into a little bit of perspective. A low end Zeiss lens, and Zeiss being a really great lens maker, a low end one of those starts around $4,000, I think, for one of their compact primes. A Cook lens, when I looked it up, they start out at the low end at around $9,000.
Wow.
And they go up from there. So they are absolutely stunning lenses.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
We're excited to we're going to try out some stuff today with the Steadicam.
And our green screen.
Do a bunch of running shots.
Yeah. So many running shots.
Yeah, I want to jump into the Steadicam.
Shoot things or something.
It's been a long time since I've been able to get into a Steadicam.
Yeah.
I last did it in high school and I loved it. So I call first dibs.
I've never worn one. So
it's fun. We'll take turns, but yeah. I call first and last dibs on that stuff.
Cool. Yeah, what else? Did we talk about... Well, we talked about the 3D printer.
Yeah, not
last
the
time.
Factory.
Yeah. Well, this is a cool place.
Yeah, so... I was able to find, we needed a laser cutter for the printer that we're making, and I couldn't find any services here in Minnesota that would help me out. They're all more industrial-based, very high-powered lasers, but we used to have a mill, it was called the mill in north...
A mill that was called the
northeast
mill.
Or something like that. But it was just an area where, you know, like the maker movement, and this was more privately owned where they had the laser cutter. They even had a 3D printer and all the stuff that you need to build stuff. They closed, and I was...
Your phrasing is fantastic.
Sorry. they closed, and I was really disappointed because I knew of them, but I didn't have a use for it until now. And then through some community sites, I finally found the Hack Factory. Well, they're officially called... The group is the TC Makers. And the place that they work out of is the Hack Factory, and it's member run. You just pay a monthly fee and you get access to all this woodworking gear, metal gear, for metal, you know, like welding and stuff like that. And the timing was perfect. They just ordered a large laser, bed,
You're underselling it. It's the coolest fucking place.
It really is. You need to bring some motion into this.
Yeah, there's all sorts of places like this all over the city or
the country.
The country, yeah. which is awesome. It's the new movement, subtle movement of maker stuff.
Yeah. Which Adam Savage is also a huge proponent of makers, and he comes and speaks at the big nationwide Maker Faire conference every year.
Great speech by him. Should look it up. The Indiana Jones hat making.
Yeah, that's a great story.
One from the Maker Faire.
We better move past this quickly or I'm going to get out of Indiana Jones and there's nothing to do.
Yeah, so we're just excited because what's great about the equipment is the people that are there and the connections that we can make to some really creative, self-motivated individuals.
And it's
just making things.
And it's especially nice. It's giving people access to equipment that is possibly forever out of their ability to purchase,
like professional vacuum former.
Yeah, professional vacuum. CNC mills are outrageously expensive. This laser cutter is. I've seen laser cutters that are $60,000-$70,000.
No, this one was they're a lot cheaper now.
Yeah,
but this one was like $12,000.
Yeah, well, I mean, like there are those that are out there, and you know, having welding gear and stuff that people maybe they can afford it, but they don't have a spot for it. It's like the CNC milling machine was a very large.
It's very heavy.
It was probably, about a 4 foot by 4 foot, that big one? And equipping people to be able to use those tools is an amazing service.
Well, especially like if you live in a small apartment in a city or something like that,
which
you don't have the space to have even the small equipment like a table saw or like a bandsaw or anything like that, like that's there for you to use.
That's the other thing. I just have to geek out for a minute. They have a stop saw, which is an amazing table saw that... It's this guy invented it that there is an electrical current.
This guy invented it?
Yeah, this guy.
Give you some guff.
And it's designed, there's an electrical current that runs, a very low one, that runs through the saw blade. And when a circuit is completed or when it detects something that conducts electricity like your finger, an aluminum cartridge smashes underneath the table saw bed. Smashes into the saw and the saw drops down and it takes like a hundredth of a second to do this. So the guy designed it so if you're using the saw properly and your finger accidentally gets caught, because if on a regular table saw, if your finger hits the blade, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And it's just gone. There's nothing stopping it. So, but this, like, you get away with a nick on your finger, if even that. But it's still, like, it will still cut through wood like it's supposed to and everything.
Yeah, be careful really about great. That, though, just because there, if it trips it, you pay $100, which is fine for your finger. It saves your finger $100, golden. But it will also trip to sometimes, like, wet wood or something like that, too. So you just have to be careful to make sure that your wood's not going to be conductive either.
Yeah.
Next time I'm there, I want to ask if the arcades are functioning, because they've got these awesome arcades, which I dig. Vending machines, lounge areas, beer in every fridge.
Their vending machine has what? Does it have the Raspberry Pi or the Arduino?
Pi.
The Pi? Like, you know, it's a vending machine for makers, for nerds.
Yeah.
There's no food in it, in the one that they have out front.
Yeah.
But there's, like, you know, there's Raspberry Pis and, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. So it's a really cool group of people. We were talking to a lot of them. A couple of them are on the Replica Prop Forum. And Bob was showing me some of their Star Wars made stuff. They've got lightsabers and blasters and Darth Vader suits that are all, like, perfect.
Yeah, the Darth Vader one by itself was, made to be a replica of the one on set. You know, all the, like, they specifically found all the little parts that the Star Wars people use.
From, like, old vacuum cleaners and stuff.
Little vent on a vacuum cleaner. Like, that's what the people used the Star Wars set to make that suit.
Yep. It's starting to look at like a movie like Star Wars. Because it's the way prop making is done has changed so much. Because, like, in the Star Wars era, when you wanted to make something, you needed to find, you need to do kit bashing. You need to find, oh, this part looks cool. Like, on Luke's lightsaber, there's the LED part from an old calculator is on it. Whereas, and that goes for everything, like Han Solo's blaster, which is something I really want to make. You know, it's a traditional broom-handled, what's it called?
Walther, I think.
Well, whatever it is.
It's a broom-handled pistol.
Yeah, broom-handled pistol. And then it has, like, the flash muzzle off of a machine gun. It has a scope from some other rifle. But nowadays, it's all, like, custom-made stuff. So it's, if you want to make a modern-day prop, a lot of times you have to go through the work of, you know, you need to machine it by hand or do something or 3D print it rather than, you know, you get to do all the fun research of going and find out, oh, it's this. I need to go find this other thing to make my blast.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of sci-fi movies that have guns, they kind of model themselves after, like, modern military rifles.
Yeah.
As opposed, I feel like the ones from, like, Star Wars maybe are more iconic because it's Star Wars maybe, or maybe because, they had to, you know, use existing materials and piece something together that wasn't based off Mauser. Of... What?
Broom-handled Mauser. Sorry. That was the gun.
Okay.
Sorry.
Whatever. Anyway, whereas, you know, a lot of sci-fi guns today, you know, they're like carbines with, like, an enhanced scope or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems more iconic to do the other way. I don't know.
Mauser Galactica is a lot like that.
Yeah, and this...
I thought Halo 4, they made some unique Prothean weapons.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
They did.
They always have the defined classes of it, though, like pistol, rifle,
shotgun.
Class,
they all kind of look the
most unique gun in the world.
Yeah, like which fits in with, you can't just have one gun that is like a multiple, because then you can't balance it with other guns and stuff like that for gameplay.
But we're going back to the maker factory, the hack factory, sorry. It is going to be nice because of, like, you're talking about the laser cutter for our 3D printer. And there's, like, one thing I'm going to be hopefully taking on in the next few months is making our own Free Fly Movi, which is this, we talked about it 3-4 podcasts ago, electronically gyro-stabilized...
Three-axis
camera stabilizer. And, you know, it's for the one that can hold, like, a 15-pound camera, which is important when you get up to, like, epics and, you know, big DSLRs and whatnot. It's like a $15,000 stabilizer, but from me talking with some people at Cinequipped and whatnot, and some of my research, you know, we could make one ourselves for about $900.
Yeah.
Or so.
Would this replace your Steadicam project?
No, because I was talking to one of the clients at Cinequipped, and because he's made his own, the one thing he needs to upgrade is the motors, because he doesn't have brushless motors, which is a big part of what makes the Steadicam so smooth. He says it works great, but it is, even like, because his was an all carbon fiber one, like the one I'm going to make is going to be mostly carbon fiber for the supports, but it is still heavy to hold. So a lot of times you still need to have the arm to put it on, but then you don't need to worry about a counterweight. is the big thing. So you get to, you do get to lose a lot of that bottom weight that you need to make it work. Mm. But but yeah, that's an ongoing project that's gonna take a while for me to get working on. But it will be fun.
Right on. Well, excited. Moving into regional stuff, the Twin Cities Film Fest, International Film Fest, is coming up. The deadline's already passed, but the films are being shown next month, October, I believe. Just a quick list of some notable screenings we've had recently. The films Like Crazy, The Bully Project, and 50/50 were all screened at Twin Cities Film Fest. And yeah, so I guess we're too late to submit anything.
Not that
we've had anything yet, but
next year.
Are we gonna go to some of that stuff or?
Oh yeah, I definitely would. Oh yeah, so it's October 17th through the 26th, this upcoming month.
Should put it on the calendar.
Mm-hmm.
We went, was that 2 years ago already? To one panel?
Oh, I didn't go to that. Yeah, it was two years ago. It was a year ago.
I think it was just a year ago.
Yeah.
I went to the producers panel. And then I think you and I went to
Well, we went to like a fundraising.
Yeah, thing. When we first learned about a lot of this.
Was that just us three?
Yeah. Wade couldn't go.
Oh, okay.
Wade can't always go.
No.
Yeah, but that stuff is free. So, I mean, you just kind of show up and go.
It was pretty light on the attendance.
Mm.
Yeah. Kind of weird. But
what do they talk about?
The one we went to was about they had like different people from, like, one person was from the Snowbait project thing, mm-hmm. and then like
there was a couple
the IFP or whatever, yeah. and then they're just talking about how can you get your project to be accepted or looked at least.
Yeah, which it was nice to learn about those because there's a lot of great incentive programs, but the one thing I sort of felt left out is they were really going towards the higher end almost of independent film. Like, mm-hmm. they were talking about budgets that were $20,000,
$40,000. Well, the Snowbait, though, they did say they accept anything. It's just you have to have your shit together.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
have to
have all your shit.
But a lot of the other stuff.
You can't plan with it from the beginning. It has to be after the fact.
Yeah.
So maybe they use that 20,000 mark as, like, people who have their shit together are this or above.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, like, usually, like, but if you're trying to do a low budget, you're just kind of... winging it half the time. And,
yeah. And well, but even like with Down Under Heaven, like
afterwards.
we have a very, very small budget. We have a micro budget for Down Under Heaven and
non-existent.
You know, we will have our shit together. We do have our shit together. Like, we know we have our plans set out and everything, but
our budget's it's existently. It's just so small. It's like
what's our budget weight?
It's like a quantum phenomena. You can't see it, but it's
there somewhere.
On a subatomic level. It's there. Yeah. But, yep, so that's regional stuff. I don't think we have anything more for that.
Yeah, we're starting to get into some of the downtime for Minnesota film because we're starting to get towards... We still got fall coming up, but then we get into the winter when it really slows down because filming in the weather can be dangerous at times just for your equipment. So
yeah.
It slows down a bit. Mm-hmm. But
has anyone seen, well, Leah's Kick-Ass 2, you guys?
I've seen it. I worked at a movie theater, and so I saw a lot of movies over the course of a shift watching from the booth.
Right.
So I didn't necessarily see it in the right order, but I've basically seen it. I know the story. I know a bunch of the scenes.
Lee, what did you think?
It's ridiculous.
It is. I really
super over the top, which was awesome, and that's why I went to it in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jim Carrey was
really
fun. He was
good. You can already tell it's him because of the prosthetics on him.
Yeah.
And how he's acting.
Yeah.
There's one part of that movie. have we all seen the first one, Ben?
I've seen it, yeah.
Nope.
Okay, you're killing me. So the Chris, the kid of the villain in the first one, he's at the beginning, he's pissed off at his mom, and then he ends up accidentally killing her. And then
I forgot that happened.
Yep. And what's funny is he's so pissed off at Kick-Ass for killing his dad, but he doesn't even care that he killed his mom.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's going through her old stuff with his like bodyguard guy, and they come across like her old S&M stuff. and then I'll never forget it. So he's obsessed with becoming a supervillain, and so later on his like bodyguard guy comes in the room. And he's wearing his mom's S&M stuff. He's like, Chris, he's like, no, I'm the motherfucker. And I just lost it. I just lost it. I was just cracking up.
No, the scene I loved the most was he got, what was it, Mother Russia? this like beast of a woman, like Russian woman, that just looks like the guy from Rocky.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
Woman version. No. And she just like goes apeshit on these all these cops and stuff. And
I think it's just, 10. Oh, she kills like 10 police officers. Like,
just ridiculous, like throwing, like rips a car door off, throws it at one, and
puts a lawnmower on the back of a cop car, backs it up into another cop car. The lawnmower goes to the windshield and cuts all the cops up. It's like B movie, like gore, like horror
it's
style.
It's a slaughterhouse film. Slaughterhouse film.
Well done, though.
Yeah.
Not cheesy at all.
And so like Chris, the super villain's like, he's trying to get a core group together, and he like wants to name everybody like the most like basic stereotypical.
Racist,
yeah, he's like, there's this like black guy who's good at boxing. He's like, Black Death, and his bodyguard's like, whoa, come on, man.
Isn't that just a little lot racist?
He's like, you know, stop with the stereotypical names. He's like, Archetype, not stereotype. Big difference. But I really liked it. I watched the first one before I saw it in theaters, so I was kind of like, you know, had that momentum going.
Right.
Yeah.
So I
recommend watching it.
Yeah, even though it didn't get as good ratings for some weird reason. It got worse ratings on Rotten Tomatoes than Spring Breakers, which is ridiculous. James Franco's Spring
above.
Breakers. Whatever. What does Rotten Tomatoes know? Sometimes they're
true.
Wrong.
It's true. The other one that
it's all of film critics, which are biased a little bit.
They're all looking down their nose at us.
Well, it's just funny, like you look at some films and it'll get like 30% critic rating, and then you look at the user side and it's like 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the people are watching the films that the credits don't like.
But you guys saw another movie that I haven't seen yet.
Jobs.
Yeah.
Yep.
With the first of two Steve Jobs biopics that will be
There's going to be more.
There's going to be.
You said that
one.
Right, David.
Yeah, I know, right? but yeah, there's going to be another biopic. Being written by Aaron Sorkin of The Newsroom and The West Wing fame, and also what's the other movie he did?
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
So what did you guys think of this one?
Was that that was David Fincher.
I didn't think it was as bad as a lot of the critics were painting it to be. I, for the most part, I did enjoy Ashton Kutcher's performance of Steve Jobs. I think he did really well to capture his mannerisms, the way he walks and talks.
The walking bothered me a little bit.
Yeah, it seemed a little exaggerated.
It was just like he was like walking that when he was like pretty young. He said, maybe he does. I haven't seen him walk a lot.
The one thing I didn't
like that limping.
The main thing I didn't like about his performance was in one of the scenes when he gets emotional. I did get he lost a little of Jobs and gained a little bit of Kelso. A little Kelso came out in the some of the high emotional scenes. And I did think that Wozniak was sort of the punchline, the token fat punchline guy a lot of the time.
Well,
he was a funny guy.
The problem is they're still trying to make a movie. Like, real life is boring. Let's be honest. Like, no one talks like that, especially the Aaron Sorkin. Like, that's going to be really over the top.
Someone once said, Aaron Sorkin is fantastic at writing the way people don't talk.
Yeah. which is the reason I watch it, because I want to see people act like that. Otherwise, I just, like, go around in public and watch people, which is fun, too. But
Ben, what did you think?
Like I said before, I think that Ashton Kutcher is, like, it was really uncanny sometimes how much he looked like Steve Jobs. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think that's the biggest thing, is that I enjoyed watching the movie. I think artistically it was decently well done, but I don't know. It wasn't everything that I wanted it to be. I don't think.
What did you want it to be?
I don't know. It
just wasn't it.
I guess, yeah, it just wasn't. I
don't know what I want, but it wasn't that.
Yeah.
The only problem I had with it was it didn't wrap up very well.
Yeah, it ended at a very weird place.
Yeah.
Don't give me spoilers.
No, it's just like,
he dies at the end.
Shut up. Oh my God.
It was just like,
he kills Dumbledore.
It was building up all this conflict and stuff, and then
it just started ended on the conflict.
They fixed it, and then, but then they continued a little bit.
And not enough, though.
But then
it's like the conflict part was still too pressing in your mind. They didn't let you move past it to what was happening next.
Yeah, they didn't show the result of
the changes he made,
the changes that
and
he
his
made
return
and the conflict, and they also had like a flashback in the beginning with him introducing the first iPod,
mm-hmm.
and I thought they were going to go back to that,
and that's how it was going to
end.
Oh, they didn't.
Yeah. No, they didn't.
Oh.
So I was just like, I don't know. I was just like, oh, okay.
Now it's over.
That's weird.
And
so,
because like you think of that era as like the Divine Jobs era, like he's coming out with iPods, iPhones,
yeah.
iPads.
It ended with them talking about the eMac, the colorful one.
Is that what they called it?
No, that was the first iMac. The eMac was just a white.
Oh, was that the white one?
Yeah.
With the arm, wasn't it?
No, the eMac was the same shape as the iMac, like the the bulbous, but it was white.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that the
I thought those were all eMacs.
Well, he's like, it started out as the blue one, and then they're oh, wait, we should do other colors,
too.
The
first iMac was the one with all the different colors.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. So, also, Video Game High School, I wanted to touch up on that, because I had just started watching it. I know I didn't want to talk about it last time.
Season finale just happened last week. Watch that.
Of season two.
No, season two.
So. Has anyone else seen season two?
I have not yet, because I am a backer on it, and so I'm getting the Blu-ray.
And you want to hold off.
And so I'm just holding off, and I just watch it all at once afterwards. So, but if you need to talk about it, go ahead and talk about it.
That's kind of good, though, because you don't have to deal with the constant commercials. They have like three commercials.
Oh, it depends on where you watch it, actually. I realized that if you watch it on mobile, you don't get any of the commercials.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't want to watch it on my phone.
The other thing I want to download, I still need to download, because I do get to download this as a backer. But they have the 48 frames per second version.
Oh, yeah.
And they have all the video game stuff in 48 frames.
That is
and
cool.
So I can get that. So I've been, I keep forgetting.
What have you thought so far, Wade?
I really liked the first episode. It kind of dealt with a lot of the problems that I saw in season one. But I don't know. By the time we got to because I watched the second and third one, and I'm kind of confused because. It's like they, the third episode, there was a thing with Jenny and her mom, and she was emotional. It's like they, every now and then, like maybe a tenth of the time, they want to try and build, meaningful character moments, but then they just like spend entire episodes not doing anything that of significance or anything that matters. Like episode two, where they're just running around trying to steal soda out of the teacher's lounge and, Like nothing happens.
It feels like each episode is kind of self-contained. The conflict happens and then it ends. There's not really a progression in between each one.
I'd like to see an overarching something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
Something to tie it all together.
I don't know. I guess I started having the same problems as I did with the first season. Is that it just seems kind of cliche. The whole kind of TV show seems kind of cliche as far as like we're in high school, we're gonna have these high school problems, and my mom's now a teacher, why this sucks, and it's I don't know. For me it seemed like a lot of the problems are just
I think real life high school problems are more interesting than what's happening in this show.
Yeah.
And because it's frustrating because some of the shots and like in their when they're playing like are so cool. I'm just critiquing the story, by the way. I'm not critiquing how it's shot, which is
mm-hmm.
really cool. But, nothing matters in the, why do I care about these characters? What, Brian's scholarship is over, so he has to be a janitor now. It's but that doesn't,
Where does that come from?
And this being nervous around Jenny and, all that should have ended 6 episodes ago in last season. It's still going on. He's still nervous around her and, their weird relationship and it's not going anywhere. And I was telling Lee that it'd be really cool if, because I use Harry Potter as an example because it's kind of similar. You have, three friends at a boarding school type place that's really unique. So it's kind of like Hogwarts. And all the while there's this overarching impending doom of the Death Eaters and Voldemort coming back. And so having something like that in Video Game High School, I don't know. I don't know what it would be.
Global championships of video games are coming up.
Or just crazy. Just something real, something to remind you that this is really fun, but it you know what I mean? It's not.
It's going somewhere. There's something coming. Something bigger is happening.
Yeah, I don't know. Just something to bring the audience back to reality.
Mm.
Because I don't know. I kind of lost my train of thought.
It's well executed, but no substance.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Because, again, I'm still waiting for a reason to root for Brian D. He doesn't seem like a true protagonist to me, other than he has the most screen time.
And there wasn't really an antagonist either in this season. There really hasn't been. Or that's a consistent true. One. Because like in the first season, there was the law. And then this one, there is still the law, but he has his own kind of side story. But they don't really go into it very much at all. Like in the very first episode, they say that he was banned for cheating or whatever. But they don't really go into that. And through the entire season, they just talk about... Or he just acts, and he's.
I will say
stupid stuff.
He's pretty funny though. I think.
Well, he's hilarious. I love the actor, and especially the stuff he does with the 5 second films. I think they're hilarious. But I feel like it's just a really cheap cop out. Like we'll just have this guy who's like, we'll have him throw up every once in a while, just like do this random disgusting thing that's supposed to be funny.
Yeah, I know. And there's parts that I'm like, oh, don't. But for the most part, I think he's the only like. Thing I find entertaining in the show, because halfway through episode 2 I was like, no, don't go back to how it was in season 1, because now I don't want to finish this episode, but I will, I guess. I don't know.
So with all that, makes me feel like I don't really want to watch it. Would you recommend?
I would only recommend
watching it.
I would recommend you watch it just so you know what the hell I'm talking about. Here's the thing,
you can watch with me when I get the Blu-ray.
I would still recommend it, but personally I'm kind of sad face about it because of how I want to like it more than I am right now.
I would recommend it for what it is. Like, I would like to see more online TV shows. I would like to see more YouTubers actually making these big movie things or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Do you think something I brought up, I think, last time, do you think a 16-year-old would enjoy this?
Oh, definitely.
Oh,
rather
totally.
Than a 25-year-old.
But here's the thing. They have such a high production value, and they have so like much cool content. It's like I feel like they're blowing it. They're not providing younger people, and me, more importantly, with an engaging and meaningful story that I want to remember. There's none of that. I have no reason to go back and watch season 1. I don't
like
care.
That reminds me of a Kevin Spacey speech that I posted on our group
thing,
which is it was cut together. I think it was like BBC or something like that. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about his show. Which Ben loves.
House of Cards.
But rather that fans want story.
Mm-hmm.
They're thriving for it. They're hungry.
Yeah.
They want Game of Thrones. They want House of Cards. They want
and
these
long
shows.
As you provide
and,
it
and
with
if,
like a...
And if they want to binge on it, they're going to binge on it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And you were talking about like the money they spent. Just a few quick numbers off of this. For season 1, they spent... $636,000 on season 1. For season 2, they spent $1,339,000.
Which is still pretty cheap.
Oh, yeah, that's cheap. That is pennies compared to anything else.
Yeah, and if you're shooting in 48 frames per second and with all the visual effects they do and all the, like, the locations they get and all the, like, the art that they've, you know, had people create for, like, the logo for the high school and all the t-shirts and everything.
That would just be millions in the professional.
Right, exactly.
If you basically take everything that they spend on and probably give it a multiple of 3-4, you get to a professional level budget.
And that's the thing. I'm really impressed with the production value and look and everything they have. But without that central core... Mm-hmm. What do you have? And the thing is, like, it's almost like they're trying to go for that Pokemon, Harry Potter, you know, core, like, the protagonist, his best friend, and the girl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like they wanted to start with that, but it is going nowhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want, really, I know Quarter Digital is working on moving towards the movie or TV show.
Yeah.
They had one, actually.
They're more like experiments and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
I want, because the stuff I've seen from them, they have the story, they still have the humor and stuff, but they have good, just
I enjoy their stories
solid
more than
I do stories.
For
so
yeah, I've only seen the one episode of Tether that they were trying to do some narrative stuff. What else do they have?
They also had
Sync was the big one.
Sync. Yeah, and that's actually pretty good. Like it's worth watching.
That one's
more so than VGAS.
There was a new one directed by. The guy in Dubstep Guns.
The Asian dude?
Yeah. I forgot his name. But I forgot what was... They did a video with him, and I thought it was mm-hmm. pretty clever and really
just
kind of funny. And
mm-hmm.
Recommend watching
it. As I said before, as I say again, I think Corridor Digital is better than Freddie W, in my opinion. And not because they have Minnesota background.
Sure. I mean, I've seen more of Freddie W, so I guess I'd have to watch more of Corridor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
I just hope they collaborate more, and with them doing this, they're going to attract more creative people, and hopefully they can...
Step it up.
Convert some of that.
Mm-hmm.
Some good stuff.
As cool as all of their little, like, you know, 2-minute shorts are on YouTube, I kind of stopped watching them because, you know, at some point, like, it's just like 2 minutes of some random stuff happening, like the milkman who spits milk.
I don't like the milkman. they have like a farting short.
Oh, that one was terrible.
So,
well, it's they gotta pay rent.
Yeah,
no,
that's all they do.
They'll get the views.
So those aren't really doing it for me anymore. So, maybe I'll check out some of
that. They had a really cool gravity gun video that they did for Geek Week.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's good.
What did you say, Lee?
I said, what is doing it for you?
What is doing it for me?
Yeah.
If I wanted Video Game High School to be, that would have been so great.
Harry Potter
right at now. A Video Game High School. That's essentially. Not from those guys.
Yeah, but if you had to pull from anything on YouTube for what you want.
Well, I'm just saying, is there something that you're like feeding off of right now rather than Freddie W?
I'd have to get back to you. I can't think of anything right now.
I like the Rooster Teeth shorts.
Rooster Teeth, yeah. I've been watching. I love Achievement Hunter in their Let's Plays.
Yeah.
And just watching those while I work on stuff.
I've been watching League of Legends esports. It's so entertaining.
I love Rooster Teeth so much. Well, as you guys know, and I'll go off on a thing, but to stop myself from going off on Rooster Teeth, because I love them so much, the other big news in filmmaking is Hayato Miyazaki is retiring, who was the creative director and a regular director and a writer and a producer at Studio Ghibli in Japan. And so he was behind movies like My Neighbor Totoro, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, Castle in the Sky, Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind.
I love those movies.
Amazing movies.
They're really
like,
good.
They're anime, but it's like Disney cartoons in the U.S. It's like the Japanese version of that. So it's like high-end animation. So like you don't get the weird spiky hair. For the most part, like people, it moves normally. Like it is,
like, there's
absolutely
still some
gorgeous
weird
filmmaking.
Japanese stuff that's in it, but the stories are
absolutely
fantastic.
And usually when it comes over to the U.S., they work with Disney, and they get some really good voice actors.
Yeah, like I know a lot of them. Like they have like Patrick Stewart, and he's been in a bunch. I think even
Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Liam Neeson has been in a couple.
Ponyo, was that studio?
Yeah. I didn't like Ponyo. I think that got a little preachy.
Yeah.
And it kind of had a meh ending. But anyway, great stuff. So, I think he definitely left a great foundation, and his son has been doing a lot of directing at Studio Ghibli lately. So I think we're still going to see stuff come out of Studio Ghibli. Now the fun one.
Apple.
Now Apple. Yeah.
We're all fans.
Yeah, we're all Apple fans. We're all Apple users here. And so I thought, because in theory, though no invites have gone out yet, the rumor mill has going that in 8 days, September 10th, will be the Apple Press
event.
There
was invites, and that's
was
why
it?
They know.
No, there were no invites.
Nothing's been out yet. In theory, it's the 10th. I am getting, as it's getting closer, I'm thinking that it might not be the 10th. It might be a little bit later. Because they would have said, because there hasn't been. Usually they get about 2 weeks out.
Sometimes they don't say anything.
Anyway.
Because they just do it in the small room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so I just want to hear what some of the thoughts are on some
of
the
rumor devices. Why don't you go
first?
Well, I just saw on Mac Rumors some... thought to be first assembled powered on iPhone FC. Yep.
FC or just it's just C.
FC. FC colored iPhones.
Oh, the 5C?
5C, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, where was the F coming from?
FC.
Yeah, 5C. It'd be so 5C. The big rumors that are coming out at this event, just a quick recap, are the iPhone 5S, which will probably follow in traditional the S models of previous years, and the iPhone 5C. Should be a plastic, it is plastic one.
The insides of a 4S, I believe.
I'm not sure.
I've read is the insides of a 4S.
Well, this is the first time that they've done color, right?
Yeah.
Besides black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this would also be a departure from the traditional Apple in the sense that they are now, the fact that they're even making a cheap iPhone. Mm-hmm. This would be the iPhone 5 cheap. if you will.
Because in the past, yeah, the cheap iPhone was always the previous iteration iPhone, which was still good.
Like, I'm using an iPhone, and everyone else here has a 5. I have a 4, and, you know, I wish I had a 5, but the 4 is working great.
Mm-hmm. Now that I'm on 4G, it's just like,
I know.
Even sometimes with the 4G, it's like, go faster.
See, I'm okay with it right now because I don't know the use of 4G, everyday 4G, so I'm living in blissful ignorance of what I'm missing.
Sometimes my wireless is slow, so I switch.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. To get to go faster. Here's the thing. I got the iPhone when it was Edge, before 3G.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was going from a flip phone, so to me, the fact that I could load YouTube videos was awesome, even though it took a little longer. Going to 3G, I was like, oh my God, this thing's lightning fast. And then going to LTE, I'm like, wow. This is great. Yeah,
it's amazing.
My Wi-Fi is slow. Got to turn that off.
Yeah, but the other fun thing. So they have the color one. So I think this is, if they do it, it will be a sort of a harkening back to those original iMacs of having different colors for it. And then now in theory there will be a total of 4 colors for the S, or the executive end of it, on the 5S, which would be the black, the white, champagne, graphite, and champagne. Which the champagne doesn't bother me. Surprisingly enough, it looks kind of nice. Like, the original rendering I saw, it was like
the gold,
and it looked like crap. But the champagne, it's subtle enough that it works.
I thought it looked pretty good.
And the graphite one looks really good too.
When did they say iOS 7 was coming out?
The rumor, I think, has it the 20th.
Because I'm excited about that.
It's usually about 10 days after the announcement. So if the announcement is on the 10th, then it will be around the 20th. Because I'm really looking forward to it too.
I'm really hoping that they're going to have an update for the MacBook Pros, to be honest. Like, I don't think it's going to happen, but I hope it does.
I know I was reading on Mac Rumors how there's shortages. There's becoming, on third-party retailers, they're running low on their iMac and MacBook Pro stock. So it's possible they may do like sort of the silent web update of it, when they just post it on the website, like, oh, it's the new ones now.
And there's been some rumors around that. The new MacBook Pros are supposed to have the Haswell processor, which would be great because it's going to help for battery life. But then they've also been talking about the 15s that usually have, the 15-inch MacBook Pros that generally have a discrete or dedicated graphics card built in, that it won't have that anymore.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the Haswell was targeted as a processor for like the Airs and stuff like those type of computers, not necessarily a high end
processing machine.
Yeah, but there's been
notebook computer.
I guess Apple's requested a top of the line, like better than anyone else exclusive processor from Intel. That's supposed to have like a really good GPU built into it or something like that. But
it'll be curious, because like there's the persistent rumors all the time that Apple may get away from using Intel completely on anything.
I hope they don't.
Of theirs. I hope they don't either, but then moving to like something like the A7 chips, like their mobile chips in the full computers.
If they did that, could you dual boot without an Intel?
I don't know. I hope they don't.
It'd be difficult.
Because I think they may be trying to control too much. Like, I think
control, they'd still want to support that, because that's...
that's a big use.
To me, that's a big buying option.
And I've heard now they're not dual booting, but they're now, a lot of Apple stores will have one of their iMacs in store that will be running Parallels desktop client, which allows you to do Windows programs in a Mac partition. Yeah. And to try and push Macs for business more.
Well, Parallels, you just run a VM. It's not like you run Windows programs in Mac, you run Windows programs in Windows.
Well, it allows you to assume, like, look like it's working that way. You can do like hybrid mode where it just looks like
at any rate, they're trying to push more towards businesses who don't want to get Macs because all their programs are Windows based.
I think sometimes, like, they've been the laptops at least have been like rated the best computers to run Windows.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I used to run Windows for work on my Mac, and it was so much better than any of the computers there. Like running XP and stuff.
I think a recent test rendered that result as well.
Yeah.
That the best laptop to run Windows 8, I believe it is, is a MacBook Pro.
I'm most excited to go to the Apple Store and try out the new Mac Pros.
Oh my gosh.
That's going to be awesome.
I can't even describe. that little coffee grinder trash can. Yes. Yeah, it looks stunning. I don't care that it looks like a coffee grinder. Just don't put it on the kitchen table. Someone will dump coffee in the top of it.
Now that I've done the Hackintosh, though, I don't think I can go back. Like the freedom to,
yeah,
to use what I want.
I don't see you going back.
No, but it's too restrictive. I do wish that the new Mac Pro refresh was something more akin to the old now.
I bet you do, Grandpa. Want to stick to the old ways?
Where I can open up the lid and I can throw in my own hard drives. I can throw in my own PCI expansion cards.
It's all external now.
Yeah, but the thing is, hopefully because now there are finally some PC expansion cards for Thunderbolt. There are hopefully more peripherals will come around. But there's not that many. There's a handful of hard drives.
Sound just like Gus.
Yeah, there's the one monitor for it. I think somebody, I don't know if it's out yet, someone has made an external PCIe enclosure that runs Thunderbolt so you can plug in cards externally and then run a Thunderbolt to the computer. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's even been released yet. That might still be something in development.
That's the problem, though, is, okay, you get this nice little cylinder thing, but to get good stuff, power and hard drives, then you have to have all these little devices all around it that you have to connect in through Thunderbolt. So it's like, yeah, it kind of defeats
them. Well, but like, don't get me wrong. If I can afford it, I'm getting one. I'm totally getting
anyway,
one.
Anyway, so I'm just excited to check it out and see it in person because it looks like it's a really cool design. Also, I mentioned Gus, me, I think Rooster Teeth. Bernie Burns has a cameo in Video Game High School.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you already know. All right. Well,
no,
never mind.
I knew about that. Believe it, I consume a lot of Rooster Teeth content.
Oh, what about your
that's cameo, right, or whatever? Thank you. I forget. So, you know, I was at RTX and I was in I got to be in the slow-mo guys video. I've watched them both videos, the behind the scenes and the regular one, many times. I haven't seen myself there as I was hoping to. But yeah, they just released yesterday first episode of season 2 of The Gauntlet, which is like their video game competition show. And I am at around 2 minutes and 20 seconds in. You can see me wearing a Rooster Teeth hat and a green olive drab colored shirt.
How close are you?
I'm pretty close.
Yeah,
to the camera.
It's like three people, and he's
probably,
you can tell it's him without having to like really search for it.
Yeah, awesome. you can totally see me, and so I was super excited that
you guys
made
are just
it in
like,
there.
Just like a panning shot of people cheering.
Yeah,
he's in there.
I'm totally there. And I was so happy.
That's awesome.
I was like watching it, and then like the shot went by, and I was just like, wait a second. And I backed up. I was like, oh my God.
I know that guy.
And you posted it on the Facebook.
Yeah,
and then
like,
David's
going to go.
And David reposted it, all caps.
And it happened. And then I just start yelling and spinning around in my office chair. Ben comes walking in, and I'm just having my hands waving, like, oh my God, I'm in the Rooster Teeth short. Video.
Yeah, with that note.
Yeah, should we get to test in our equipment?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back in about a month, and I want to get Sean here for the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
exciting.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so see you later.
See you.